Hello and welcome to Structured Insights, your go-to podcast for practical takes on today's biggest tech and cybersecurity challenges. I'm Nick, your host today, and I'm excited to dive into a topic that I think is everybody's talking about, which is ransomware. And it's something that definitely keeps businesses awake at night. And today we've got two very smart people on the pod to talk about this. One is Mr. Bill Tracy, the CRO at Structured. Hey, Bill. Welcome. And Rob Waite, Director of Governance and Risk Compliance. Again, a mouthful of a title, which just means he is smarter than me. So we are super excited to jump right into this. It will not be a jargon fest. It will be some down-to-earth conversation about how to keep your business running, your business safe, and learn some exciting things to hopefully continue to do well in 2025. So you guys ready to get into it?
Excited.
Absolutely.
Let's do it, Nick.
All right. So let's start with a what if. Let's imagine a customer, 2 a.m., they get a frantic call. The entire customer database is locked out. There's a ransom note on every screen. What do you tell the customer?
Well, I first tell them to call Rob Waite. That's kind of my go-to. So I think that's a perfect segue to introduce Mr. Waite here. And Rob, what should folks do when that situation happens?
I mean, the first thing that I would ask is, do you have an incident response plan? Because we need to start using it immediately. And if you don't, then we need to start, you know, talking about exactly what systems you have, you know, who's available, start waking up all members of the IT staff, get everyone involved. But it really involves, you know, just everybody being on board, finding out exactly what the problem is, nobody overreacting. And again, if there is an incident response plan, calmly go through the steps and use that plan. If it sits on the shelf and no one's using it, it's not doing anybody any good. In the case of emergency, it needs to be taken down and everybody being on the same page off of that incident response plan and working through the steps in a methodical manner so that they don't miss some very important and key steps.
So is it surprising that, key stat I read the other day was that businesses hit by a ransomware attack every 11 seconds. Is it surprising, though, that given that high volume, that a lot of businesses don't have an incident response plan?
In a short word, no. It's not surprising at all, because we deal with customers in that case all the time. And that's, quite frankly, what Structured is here to do. We help our customers through that process to identify the deficiencies in advance so that when the day comes, they have their incident response plan. Hopefully, they've already been through a tabletop exercise through that incident response plan so they better understand the roles and responsibilities of every member of the CERT team who's going to be responding. But quite frankly, we do have a lot of customers who haven't been through that process, who have not develop their incident response plan. And we would say no time like the present to get ready and to develop that plan. Working with Structured, work with whoever, there's a lot of good resources out there. ChatGPT, we would just say, use whatever resources available to you, but get a plan in place, something that you can test, run through your tabletop exercise, and at least have something rudimentary for everybody to work from.
So let's zoom out a little bit. So not everybody obviously has the technical knowledge that you guys at Structured have. So when you throw out terms like tabletop exercise, what does that mean relative to ransomware? Because I think that there are a lot of misconceptions about ransomware today. I think you'd probably agree. What is even a tabletop exercise? What does that mean? What is an incident response plan?
Bill, do you want me to go with that one?
I think it's I want you to jump in here, but it's kind of funny as I'm thinking about this. It takes me back to my old high school baseball coach and the five P's and the old adage, proper preparation prevents poor performance. I think he might have had a six P in there that I won't add in there. And really what we're talking about here is that, ransomware is not just about prevention. It's just not about recovery. It's not about plan. It's about being prepared for it in the eventuality that it could and may very well hit your business. We're seeing, unfortunately, clients of all sizes and types around the world being hit with ransomware, regardless of the tools and systems they put in place to protect or recover from it. And so you have to have a solid step-by-step plan of how you are going to have continuity of operations And that's where Rob can kind of help dive in and explain some of those pieces. But you have to have a plan, have to have a step-by-step process. I need to know who my folks that I need to have on my notification list to wake up on that Saturday at 2 a.m. are. And then we run through those tabletop exercises, which are, you know, just little war games, practice exercises. Ooh. Let's run through a mock scenario of we're hit by ransomware. Let's flesh out all these steps. Let's figure out where we have gaps in our strategy, gaps in resources, et cetera, to help kind of build out a holistic plan. But if you're not practicing regularly, you're not going to be able to perform when that unfortunate time comes.
What do you say to the people that would respond to that type of advice by saying, we're too small to be a target?
Rob, you got any stories of folks? I mean, we'll probably protect the guilty or the innocent here, however you want to look at it. But I know I can think of a couple, but you get to see a lot more than I do.
Yeah, we'll remove the names, but I mean, we see ransomware attacks across small, medium, and enterprise businesses. You know, it's indiscriminate because it's all about really the money and the extortion that they can put on the customer if they feel like they will be able to get money out of them, no matter the size, but maybe due to revenue reasons or some other reasons, lack of cyber insurance or any other thing, they will target them for ransomware. So I don't think it has to do with size as much as it is the other key components that make them a target for an attack.
Is there, I saw another number that was shocking. It said that 80% of those who get targeted and pay are targeted again, which I thought that's, you know, to your point about, you know, maybe the horror stories, like that's, you get hit once and then you think, well, it won't happen again. And then obviously it does, that how important it is to be able to have an incident response plan.
I remember a book called If You Give a Mouse a Cookie Growing Up. And, you know, maybe it rings true. I don't know why. Maybe I'm having a nostalgic day and thinking of my childhood. But, you know, the reality is one thing that we have seen there is exactly that. And usually after that, that team goes or that client might go and invest a lot of time and money and effort into tools and prevention and pieces to maybe try to shore that up. But it also speaks back to, are you exercising those tools? Are you implementing those tools correctly? And have you built the right process around that on how you're going to handle it the next time? This is, you know, the recovering from ransomware is not something that I just go buy the right XYZ product and that makes it so I'm never going to get hit again. Or I buy the next XYZ product so I can always recover from it. It's still damaging to my business. It's still damaging to brand and reputation because those bad actors are going to put your name out there on the dark web. They're going to use news outlets and channels. And so even if you're able to recover your data with minimal impact to your business, there can still be brand and reputation and customer loyalty hits. And I know of one client we had that was a small, you know, manufacturing facility of let's call it car and truck accessories, etc. You know, I wouldn't say any of their designs were, you know, massive intellectual property or anything super special. But at the same time, I think in that case, the bad actors were not looking for a lot. They thought, maybe we can get a quick 50 or 100K hit. And for where many of these bad actors are based, that's not insignificant, you know, opportunity for them. Yeah. And it might be a quick hit to make the problem go away, which is what makes some of those SMB clients, you know, potentially big targets for them.
So without naming names, what is the wildest ransomware incident you've witnessed? I guess, and even maybe take it a step further to help provide an insight, is, you know, what went wrong and then how did they bounce back from it?
I don't know, Rob, you got any fun stories from the memory bank there?
Well, you know, again, we're not naming names, but just, you know, thinking of customers who've been, you know, taken down by ransomware and basically lost weeks and weeks of production from their operational staff. You know, they're totally in shutdown mode, and if they're, you know, financially, you know, revenue generating, that's taking them out of commission completely. One of the worst cases that I can think of, quite literally took down a government entity for about 3 weeks. And we had to have restoration services come in and rebuild all the servers, rebuild all the workstations, tremendous losses of data, and then going back and trying to make sure and find out what data do we have restored so that we can you know, apply the appropriate backups. But yeah, I mean, there's tremendous horror stories. It's not just isolated to the ones that we know of here. It's across the country, and not only that, but across, you know, across the world. This is, you know, this is a problem and an endemic that's actually, you know, affecting companies, government agencies across the entire world. The U.S. is, and I read a statistic, the U.S. and Canada and Mexico, so North America, you know, represents 60% of ransomware attacks, because, you know, financial viability of the attack being, you know, lucrative to the attackers. So that's still a very valid thing, but it's happening in other places across the globe as well.
I mean, we've seen schools have to shut down class over this kind of problem, because they literally have to turn off all of the operations of the school and all of their connected technology services. And even in those cases, right, the schools are so interconnected. Okay, we go back to pen and paper. That's not always even feasible in a K-12 environment. You think about the requirements for number of school days per year, and school stress when they have 3 unexpected snow days. Imagine 23 days of not being able to have students in classrooms. And you know, unfortunately, it's like we feel like there's a story in the news. I was going through the mail recently, and we had 4 different healthcare providers across my family that all got letters in the last 2 weeks of breaches. And which was interesting to me too. And because around the breach notification point, the other problem though was all of these breaches happened like back in early 2024, and we're just getting the letters, which is great. You know, we're getting credit monitoring offers, but it was across the 4 of us in the household. It was 3 different providers that all had breaches in the same neighborhood. So you go, okay, well, somebody was obviously targeting, you know, healthcare providers in the region around the same time, and all were breaches. And the amount of loss was significant. And I think that, you know, that there's also, I think that's part of the, not to steal your thunder, Nick, but in a question, maybe back to Rob, is, you know, there's a breach notification element that companies have to be ready for as part of this incident response plan. I know those laws and regulations are constantly changing, and I certainly haven't kept up with them. And I think they can be complicated, but I think that's also part of the incident response planning that our clients need to think about is, okay, if prevention fails and recovery happens and we keep operations running, what is our responsibility to our consumers and our clients? And that is part of that IR planning and response, right, Rob?
Well, I think that's a great point, Bill. You know, everyone thinks of ransomware. They first think of what are the attack vectors for ransomware. And then on the blue team side, they're thinking about how can we defend against it. But another thing is that Bill's just mentioning is, you know, what about data classification and discovery? What data do I have that could be tied up? And then if that data is sensitive for PII, for privacy laws, PCI data, HIPAA data, CGIS data, there may be breach notification and discovery responsibilities that we have as an entity of managing that, as a custodian of that data, to let, you know, the subjects of that data know that we've been breached. So that's a very important first step, is to actually find out what data you may have in your environment, and then be able to affect an appropriate breach management strategy, you know, that lets the appropriate people know that, hey, this has happened, and, you know, we're taking the appropriate steps.
Let's go look at the human side of this, the human factor. And I want to get into some tips of, you know, what you recommend to people, how you can reduce risk. But let's talk about the human factor for a second. I think a lot of people believe that it's all about having the right provider, have the support, the technology. But is it a misconception that a lot of this is, you know, people clicking on a random link using password 123? Is that something that people need to truly understand a little bit more, that they are also responsible, as much as an enterprise or a small business wants to protect themselves? The weakest link, right, is usually the human.
Well, that's why we're going to deploy AI that takes the weakest link out of the chain, and that'll solve all your problems. Okay, good. I got Rob's probably like, where's he going with this? Uh-oh. No, I think this is, you know, you're kind of hitting on the you know, third or fourth leg of the stool of this kind of ransomware readiness conversation, and that's education. Because the reality is, this is people and tools breaching people, and unfortunately, we are the weakest link. We're all subject to it, and so user education, security awareness training are absolutely critical. And this is another area, and I don't know if you see this too, Rob, but I'm absolutely surprised how many clients, large, small, and everywhere in between, are not doing nearly enough security awareness training within their users. Because this is an ongoing need, and our clients, these security teams, security departments need to be educating their users on a regular basis across a multitude of vectors and attack lanes, whether it's social media, chat, email, telephony with vishing. And I bring up AI because AI is only helping the attacker's tools evolve faster and be much more effective in how they're targeting people. I don't know if you have anything to add there, Rob.
Yeah, that's a great point, Bill. And I think that it goes a step beyond just education of the end users, and it goes into effective penetration testing, which, you know, we do a lot of. And there's hardly an engagement for penetration testing that includes social engineering that we don't have significant success with. I mean, and these are customers of ours and companies that have a robust education and security awareness program. So it's not like they're not aware that they shouldn't be clicking on random links. They shouldn't be clicking on those text messages coming in. They're fully aware, and they're still very susceptible to it. So what we do is we put together campaigns that include phishing, vishing, smishing, all the issues, and you know, we execute those against the, you know, the customer, just to, you know, not to ridicule anybody or try to, you know, make fun of anyone, but just to educate them that this is a very real avenue of attack, and it's being exploited, you know, by people on a daily basis, and they're going to get the credentials if they fall for that attack. And even if they have mechanisms, sometimes as modern as multi-factor authentication, there can still be ways to, you know, like replay token replay attacks and things like that that can get around multi-factor authentication. So it's not the silver bullet. It's definitely better than just using weak passwords, but multi-factor authentication can be defeated as well. So those are all things that we test in penetration testing that go just a little bit beyond education, that I think takes our customers kind of to the next step in that preparation so that they're not vulnerable to those attacks.
That's great insight. So let's jump into the lightning round. Let's talk about three quick hits from each of you to help reduce ransomware. No fluff, just actually action. So you already talked about pen testing and education. So those are two. They're good ones, but what else are some quick, tangible things that you recommend customers do to try to prevent ransomware? Again, from, you know, the network design, phishing simulations, whatever you want, but let's get into those specific things that really would be good, tangible tips for people.
I'll go first so I can take the easy ones. I would say, strong email security and brand reputation tools, things that are able to look out on the web about your organization, your company, and look for folks that are trying to spoof and emulate your systems. I think that it's a very strong set of highly secure, immutable, air-gapped backup and disaster recovery solutions. And it's having a strong, conscious security awareness training within your teams. And I know I wasn't supposed to use that one, but I want to reemphasize it.
Okay, solid three for sure. Rob?
I think I'm going to go with some kind of testing to make sure that the external of your network is cleaned up. You don't have RDP exposed to the internet, remote desktop protocol, legacy, prior to VPN technologies. Make sure that everything is cleaned up and tightened up. Make sure that multi-factor authentication is used for all remote access to your network. So I just integrated multi-factor authentication, but I still feel it's a very strong, control that needs to be implemented everywhere, and especially on the outside and external parts of your network, to include cloud access. And the third is some type of stringent web content filtering, and potentially the use of enterprise browsers, kind of a new field. Bill could speak a lot more intelligently about that than I could. But there are ways to secure the browsing experience in your enterprise for remote users, so that when they're accessing applications, it's doing a little bit of data cleanup. It's doing some security and proxying, so that you're not as susceptible to some of those kinds of attacks. But again, on the web content filtering side, just making sure that there's some kind of content filtering so that people aren't going to maybe necessarily all the sites that they could be, maybe they shouldn't be. And that includes rogue AI, that includes, you know, different kinds of sites, different kinds of content, but, you know, to different organizations. But those are the three areas that I would hit.
All right.
And Nick, I've got a question for you.
Sure.
What do you think is the most used application that you have on your desktop, on your PC?
Email.
Maybe. I bet it's the browser.
Yeah.
Every business application, SaaS application, tool that you use in your browser right now, you probably have 7, 8, 10 applications running within that browser when you think about it.
We're recording this on a browser and an app.
So this is Rob brought up a great point, this secure enterprise browsing space. I want to plug it right now because it is an emerging space. And as we were going through and talking and learning about the space, that was a question that was asked to me. And everybody in the room had very different answers. Not one person did say the browser. So don't worry, it's not just you. Our team had the same response because we don't think about it. It's a piece of life and it's a piece of the enterprise that 99% of organizations are not even thinking about securing. And so this is now the most used application on our desktops in a SaaS and in a cloud first world. And so the ability to provide a enterprise security controlled browser experience where I can control the flow of data in and out of it, what applications are being accessed, what extensions are being loaded, severely reduces my risk of going to a spoofed website, going to a malicious website, loading a malicious extension that can be auto-pushed by going to a suspect link. And it's an area that many of organizations are exploring, but there are far more that are not exploring this area yet. And we think this is a great tool to take enterprise control over your users' security experience on the web, which is today the biggest attack surface and attack vector that the bad guys have against us.
That's funny. I mean, I didn't really think about it, but it is. Yeah, the amount of extensions like I have on Chrome is insane, right? It's all for convenience, right? It's trying to make enterprise business more efficient and faster, but obviously, to your point, riskier.
Well, think about, you know, back in the day, we'd go through, you know, Task Manager or whatever. If you thought you had something bad on your computer and you're trying to find like a bad EXE or a file that looks weird, go look at your extension list right now and how many are in there. And would you even recognize at a glance that you had a potentially malicious, you know, key logger or bad extension or something loaded? The browser is still a little bit of the wild, wild west, yet it's accessing all of our most secure data and applications that we run as enterprises.
Well, thanks for keeping it. I'm going to be up all night now thinking about this.
Well, if you need help, Nick, call us.
I'd be remiss for those who are watching or listening to the podcast that don't know actually what Structure does, right? I mean, they may be on the site and seeing this in a different way. How does a company like Structured help people in this regard with ransomware, right? Because it is, to both your points, is multifaceted. So where does a Structured even come into this?
So, you know, we can kind of see it over our shoulders here. And you look at these areas that we can talk to and help our clients about cybersecurity and compliance and cloud and managed services and infrastructure. What it really comes back to, and Rob, please comment here, but I think it's really starting with sitting down and having a simple kind of whiteboard and strategy assessment and a strategy session and almost a mini assessment, you know, where we can kind of run through some of those checkboxes that Rob talked about earlier, and we can sit in a 1 hour kind of whiteboard and conversation. Do you have this? Do you have this? Do you have an IR plan? Do you have the right backup tools? Do you have the right security tools? Do you have do you know where your sensitive data lives and who has access to it? Just by going through those checkboxes, from there, we can start to then distill down a list of where are some areas to go focus on first. What are the low-hanging fruit pieces? And we got to check this off one by one. This is not, again, it's not a product you go by. It's not even a day of service you get from Structured and all of a sudden you're, you know, secure and immutable. It's a process just like Zero Trust is that we talked about a few weeks ago. It's a process and evolution, but we can really help distill you down to what are the most important pieces, what's the best low-hanging fruit we can go after to make really good incremental steps, and then start to shore up the rest of it from there.
I think that's a It sounds like a lot of businesses that that what is it, the 60-70% of the people that are getting hit, they should really be calling.
Absolutely.
Operators are standing by. Yeah. You what? Operators are standing by. They're ready, ready for that call. You know, to be honest, and it's not just about trying to do, I mean, you know, it's about helping people and helping organizations avoid this nightmare. It's really not, you know, just about, you know, trying to drum up business, but, you know, that's a good side, a side effect of it, but it's about helping people work through this process preventatively, because this is just like going to the doctor, an ounce of prevention's worth a pound of cure. If you put your energies into preventing this from happening, as Bill mentioned, using all those tools, discovering where data is, incident response plans, doing the, you know, the exercises, penetration testing, you're going to be a lot more resistant to that type of attack and just, you know, preventing that from happening in the first place.
Let's look ahead. So a stat I saw said that the average ransomware, again, I think this is globally, is around $4.5 million per incident. Where, and obviously with the technology changing constantly, where do you guys see the future of ransomware? What's the next evolution in it that you guys are looking out for? I mean, you're experts in the space. What are you looking ahead at? Because you have to be ahead of what, you know, the bad actors are going to go after the enterprise and medium, small, medium-sized businesses. What do you predict will happen?
Bill, do you want me to take a swing at that?
No, please do.
So we've already seen ransomware 2.0 that kind of happened, you know, started about 2 or 3 years ago, where it became extortion oriented around exfiltration, right? They they offload your data to a cloud service, to some S3 bucket, somewhere else, and then they extort you for it because they've already got it, as opposed to just keeping you out of that data. So that was the first kind of evolutionary step of accentuating where ransomware is going. And that's extremely effective, and people are really paying for that because they don't want to be disclosed. The second, or, you know, the next phase of evolution that I see is something that Bill alluded to earlier is you know, use of AI in ransomware attacks to exploit social engineering, to further enhance those types of attacks. It's going to become more and more prevalent. The attacks are going to become, you know, more crisp and clean and actually more effective. And I think that's just going to be the very next step is just, you know, how they're using AI. And then on conversely, how the blue teams are going to be using AI to try to detect those types of attacks. You know, whether it's, you know, someone who's being spoofed on the internet or, you know, some kind of deep fake, and identify that that's actually some kind of, you know, AI attack, and then, you know, alerting the appropriate people on the blue team. So I see the escalation of this war going back and forth for a long time to come.
That's terrifying.
We need an army of white knight sentient AIs to fight against Skynet when they eventually come for us. You know, it's like all the sci-fi books that I read, and you know, the two AI spaceships trying to the systems trying to hack each other over, you know, quantum qubits or whatever. So maybe that's a little more distant future, but I think it is important, and it just brings up an interesting topic around. Everybody's talking about AI. AI is all the hype in the world. But there are really practical applications, use cases, and tools and ways to implement AI today. And it's not about just going and spending $100 billion on video cards and building the biggest, baddest AI cluster in the world, although that's super cool, you know. But how can organizations utilize AI to help protect their enterprise, make doing these data discovery, classifications, et cetera, easier and more automated? Those are areas that we can use AI-based tools and models to help your business today. It's you know, one of the reasons we launched our AI practice actually just this last week for our annual kickoff. And the message that we're trying to bring to the market is around making sure that we are looking into creative ways to use AI to make our business more efficient, more secure. One of the problems in cybersecurity is tool sprawl, and it's keeping up with all of it and keeping up with where this data lives. I mean, Rob talks about data discovery and classification, and you talk to anybody about, well, where is your sensitive data? You know, I don't care what organization it is. I don't think anybody knows where all of their sensitive data is. It can live in far too many places today. And I think there's some really practical use cases that we're going to see over the next 12, 18 months to try to make try to make that more that process more efficient using AI enabled tools and learning models to really enhance business process and cybersecurity operations is absolutely an area that's ripe for AI to support it.
Again, it sounds like, I mean, it's getting more complicated, which means you need more smarter people to help you out. So I'm gonna end with one question for each of you, and this will sound weird. It's a job title question. So, in what job title in a business enterprise? Let's go with enterprise business. Do you think needs to know more about what we just talked about around ransomware that doesn't?
That was a fantastic question, Nick.
Like we know the CTOs know it. We know the directors of IT know. We know they sleep and breathe this stuff. They, you know, drink it in their coffee. But what title really should?
I would say the CFO. I'm sorry. Yeah, I would say the CFO. Because we know that the CISO and we know that the IT director and CIO, they know about this, you know, this problem. The CFO, you know, may know from a very high level, but, you know, balancing risk, you know, versus cybersecurity insurance and, you know, exactly what's going to happen as far as, you know, these types of attacks and the impacts that they place on an organization. Breach notification is an extremely costly, you know, problem to solve as you're going through this, you know, this type of an attack. So I definitely, you know, when we do tabletop exercises, we advocate to not just include the IT team and the security team, but to include HR, legal, marketing and communication, and of course the CFO. So that, because all of those people are key stakeholders within the organization that will be impacted by this type of an event. And we include them in the tabletop exercises so that everybody has a feel for what this, you know, what this type of in a scenario, what this looks like, so that, you know, they can help be ready for, you know, a real world event.
You know, I thought about answering your question differently, but I'm going to answer it differently, but I'm going to answer the question first. So I absolutely agree with kind of the finance and operations side because of the amount of visibility to data that they have within the organization. I guess where I'm kind of thinking about answering it differently here is the another area of kind of potential vulnerability I see, and I alluded to this earlier, right? We all as people now have massive attack surfaces because of LinkedIn and social media and all that. Think about organizations that have, you know, things like administrative support operations, executive assistance to leadership and board members. Those people are highly, highly targeted within organizations because they probably have access to key customer lists. Think of maybe a sports team. What PII data do they have? Do they have access to those sorts of things? You know, it speaks back to that user education piece. And so, you know, I think about answering it differently is you have to think about the different parts of your business that could be really ripe for attack with information that's easily available out there. Because if I'm an attacker, that's probably an area I'm going after is to go, okay, this person's email box is probably ripe and full of data, or they may have access to many, many folders throughout the enterprise of sensitive data because of who they support in that organization across key stakeholders, you know, C-suite, you know, board members, et cetera. They likely have access to tremendous troves of data. To answer your question more directly, I think the other piece of this is DevOps. And DevOps is pushing really, really fast to deploy applications and serve the business or serve their clients or a combination of both. And security is not always top of mind. And so the DevOps team has to be working closely with cybersecurity and the rest of IT to make sure that as they're spinning up data, applications, and resources in the cloud on new systems and multi-cloud, that they're taking the right steps to make sure that access to that data and those applications is secure and covered under the company's kind of governance and regulatory standards.
All right. Well, for those DevOps people, the admin assistants, and the CFOs that are listening, high risk for a lot of people that really should be brought into the fold, right? They should be brought into the fold when this type of conversation exists. So, well, guys, thank you so much, Bill, Rob. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Structured Insights, focusing in on ransomware. You can watch this on YouTube or LinkedIn, and look forward to some future episodes where we will be talking about AI security, which is, I feel like it's the Wild West. So thank you again, and we'll see you on the next episode.